The following audio for the Ninja Consultant podcast was recorded in April of 2008 on a Saturday night after Anime Boston. Our friends Dan and Matt join us in a discussion of fangirls. Sorry about the robot voice, I am recording this at work. Please write to ninjaconsultant@gmail.com with your opinions and thoughts about the Fujoshi wave and when, exactly, it hit America. This particular podcast episode discusses sexuality, and is rated T-14. If this robot voice turns you on, I could do a robot version of Manga Recon. Think about it.
Get your paws off me, you dirty ape!
He can talk!
He can talk! He can talk! He can talk! He can talk! He can talk! He can talk!
I can sing!
Help me, Dr. Zaius!
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius! Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius! Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius! Oh, Dr. Zaius!
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius!
What's wrong with me?
He can talk, he can talk, he can talk, he can talk! I can sing! Ooh, help me, Dr. Zaius!
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius!
So here's Noah's question that he's been asking for a long time, and it is, when did American fandom suddenly become sexualized? Like, back in the day, you could go... Or over-sexualized. Back in the day, you could go to a Star Trek convention, and not only were there... Well, there were girls.
Of course there were girls.
But nobody was selling...
Girls.
But nobody was selling vibrators. Nobody was dressed as a sexy Klingon. They were just dressed as Klingons.
I mean, you always had your Orion slave girls, right?
Right.
But it was marginalized.
You're not talking into a mic.
Well, but...
But I can project.
You can turn to that mic.
But in at least science fiction fandom,
right.
As I remember it from the late 80s and early 90s.
Could it also be that you were 11 at that time?
I don't think so.
That you wouldn't have noticed?
Because I can tell you with absolute certainty, in the dealer's room, the Slash fan fiction, which
yes.
was called Grups, and it was relegated to one booth. And it was behind that booth, there were two middle-aged women. And that was the extent of Slash fanfic
okay.
at a convention.
Right.
And they were really, they were ghettoized. And at some point, it exploded. And I don't know when, I was probably out of touch, out of the scene. It was either in high school or college when this happened.
And I'm younger than both of you, and I definitely recognize that at some point there was a line was crossed of sorts that where we definitely kind of went overboard with the sexualization of everything.
Yeah, I think when they added like 7 of 9 or something to Star Trek.
That didn't help, certainly not.
I don't think that pushed it over the edge.
I mean, the whole slashing of Star Trek characters being like one of the earliest things that people talk about when they're discussing Slash.
That was going on in the 70s.
Exactly. That happened very early on.
But that was the fringe. Yeah.
Exactly. And then somehow that becomes like normal fandom is that
right.
Now when you're a fan of something, you ship people.
Right.
And that's like the main thing you do, it seems like.
So there's a big gap between the two, like between Doctor Who series. In the old school Doctor Who series, they don't acknowledge that people were ever writing... I'm really low, I guess. So there's a big gap between the two times that Doctor Who was coming out. And in the old series, it was a series primarily for children in its very oldest days. And as it kept going, like in the 70s, they start adding sidekicks with kind of sexy outfits for the dads who are still watching.
Sarah Jane.
Yeah. Well, not just Sarah Jane, like Leela, who's like a barbarian.
Leela, definitely.
Leela and An. Yeah, Sarah Jane had some sexy outfits, I guess.
Yeah,
but she kind of...
And then Leela. Worse and worse.
Yeah, and like Tegan and stuff start wearing very low cut blouses. But in the books about the production, they say how, you know, they're trying to cater to dads who might be watching the show after football, meaning soccer, I guess. In any case, that's not really the kind of sexualization of or catering to a female fan base. The way the new series is, then you get this gap between when the series was canceled in like 1989 and when the new series came out in 2005. When the new Doctor comes out, by the time the new Doctor comes out, they put romance in the show. There's kissing in the show. There was never kissing. He never had a sexual relationship with any of his companions. If there was romance, it was in your head. They were just good friends. It was completely platonic all the time. And by the time the new series comes out, it's okay to have him fall in love with companions. Not only that, they bring Sarah Jane back and be like, oh, she always had a thing for him. They're rewriting the past. Because fandom has gotten to this kind of point where that's the direction it kind of went in. But that's every fandom part, like from manga and anime to Star Trek nerds to Doctor Who. It's every part of fandom.
And it's great to see Avatar, because they totally, you know, take all the... They know what's going on in fandom, and they, like, tease at them with Zutarn stuff, Zang, and the school shipping episode. Like, they're self-aware now, which is...
Well, in that one episode, the Footloose episode, Katara has bedroom eyes. And, like, that kind of... It was like in Wayne's World, where Garth suddenly gets hit with the Dreamweaver in the...
Yes.
It's like, whoa! Suddenly, you know what that look means. Mm. And I'd never seen that in an American cartoon, certainly.
Yeah, and it's... I mean, considering like how it started out initially, and they were like, you know, they definitely became more mature, but not quite that level. And it's, you know, it's fun to see, but at the same time, I guess, you know, looking back at it from a bit more of a
detached example,
you know,
as far as putting it in the text, yeah. Like there is romance in life, and there is sex in life, and I am perfectly happy putting it in the text.
Mm-hmm.
It's that fandom has.
At some point, yeah.
Well, it suddenly became
standard,
fetishistic, and I mean it was always fetishistic on the fringe, but now the fetishistic elements have become mainstream.
Yes, mainstream, I guess, is the thing.
I mean, we could use the local example of, you know, Anime Boston here, because there's obviously we can say there's been a definite shift in perspectives or clientele or something. But I mean, the first two Anime Bostons were fairly tame in their outlook. I mean, maybe if there was, you know, yaoi or fangirlism, and when I mean fangirlism, I mean going completely berserk, as if, you know, things are going out of style, and if you see a slight man-on-man contact, that therefore it's going to cause massive squealing. That's what I mean by that. There's definitely somehow, there is just, I guess, what, this has been six years? I guess just somewhere along the line, there was this definite shift, and I definitely think it happened somewhere in a year or a year after the shift over to Heinz. Not to say that the venue had anything to do with it, but
well, it's definitely becoming more. But
it's
and definitely more
it's
more,
it's very it's
less.
Very strange. I mean, like today, for example, I would have say, let's see, we started. It started in 2000.
That was 2000.
2003 was first Anime Boston, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So 2003, 2004, 2005, or 2006, somewhere in there. One of those two, because I think 2006 they had bad luck before the Masquerade, and people are just going completely berserk about it. I mean, on levels that, like, and it's like, okay, yes, it's a cosplay band, that's cool, they're singing songs from a show you like. But no, it's not like that. It's like, oh my god, Yuki, I love you, I have my babies, type deal. And it's like, oof. But anyway.
A teeny bopper thing, that's been around.
Yeah,
forever.
That was the worst part. It's like 12, 13-year-olds, like, holy crap.
Teeny boppers don't react that way in the past to gay couples.
Right, and that's specifically it, because it's very strange to see teeny boppers throwing their knickers and bras at bad luck.
At gay people.
Because 13-year-olds, you know, or 14-year-olds will pass out, you know, because the Beatles are here, but they don't pass out because the Beatles are making out with each other.
Yeah. Well, the strangest example, I mean, is today we were just actually next to the Avatar photo shoot, and once that was done, I happened to look over and see there's a giant crowd of people, and they're all cheering and going crazy every 5 seconds, and I'm thinking, well, what could possibly, must be a great costume, let's go check it out. No, it's just five guys dressed up in the standard Atsuki uniforms from Naruto, humping each other in various positions and changing every 5 seconds, and somehow this is just like causing a near riot. And it's like, I just don't understand. There's just, I mean, the second AB, I think the bawdiest sketch was like you had Tuxedo Mask and Sailor Moon kissing, and then somewhere a starlight came in and pushed Tuxedo Mask out of the way and kissed Sailor Moon. That was the worst it got. And now it's like, if you're going to do a skit in the Masquerade, there has to be some sort of sexual overtone, or dare I say, attention-whoring aspect to it, because I think that's part of the problem is like the internet generation, the group that grew up with nothing, had the internet like as a full function, not like typing on Pentagon computers like, hi, how are you, in Dot Matrix, and having someone across the world saying, I am doing fine, want to play poker? But no, I mean, the would you like to play a game? No, but I mean, I think it's definitely that generation that grew up with the internet and, you know, the idea that on the internet, if you need to draw attention to yourself, you need to go above and beyond. That's transferred into the real world. And to a certain extent, these kids are away from their parents for the first time, and so it's like, hey, the lid is off, so I can act however the hell I want, and my God, that means acting complete like a buffoon.
But, like, there's fandom, and granted, like, having the internet is a very useful tool for developing that, but then there's, like, what you end up talking about.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just from a lack of things to talk about, it just inevitably goes towards sex. I don't know.
Well, that would be nice if it was just at the fringes, but for seven, it's like 75% of the con is, like, dominated by it.
And it never used to be like that.
No.
Because you had fan communities, and while you didn't have the instantaneous communication of the internet, you certainly had fan circles, even zines. In the U.S., and you had zines. And what was discussed were, they were not perhaps sexual fetishistic aspects of the genre, but they were certainly fetishistic aspects of the genre. But we've gone from someone who spends 18, 20 hours working on Blueprints of the Yamato to someone who spends 18, 20 hours writing fanfic, shipping the
erotic
characters from Star Blazers.
So I can't help but wonder if it's not what happened to Shonen Jump, because Shonen Jump had a big circulation for a long time, and it was in a lot of other countries before it was in the U.S. And when after Dragon Ball Z ended and they were kind of in a slump for titles, that's when they started really like catering to female fans, and like Saint Seiya and that kind of show. Like Saint Seiya became very popular with girls, and so they started really pandering to girls, and now they put kind
that's,
of these
that's
elements.
That's what happened in Japan.
In Japan. But how do you know it didn't spread here at some point?
I don't think so.
Where there's, no,
if you look at the current titles in Shonen Jump, I mean, they are all... Yeah, I could
personally... They're all like
they're
that.
All male-oriented. I mean, they're all... I mean, you've...
Are
Bleach,
they?
Naruto. It's all about a strong male lead character.
Or I mean, is it about a blonde guy and a brunette guy who are best friends? And I'm not
no,
joking
no, no, that's
here,
totally, that's totally correct.
We went to Comic-Con. We went to Comic-Con. Because we went to Comic-Con. And you know all of the Shonen Jump tables? All girls. All the time.
And it did... There is no question that
it's
in the 80s, Shonen Jump became Fujoshi-tized.
It did.
But in,
no,
but
we
in
have
Comic-Con,
evidence.
That's still... I still want to say fringe. I mean, it's still kind of a little bit of fringe. It's not like that's mainstream Japan and what's in reading comics,
but
right?
It's like the main. It's like a thermometer for fandom there. It's really huge.
But it is mainstream in Japan.
And so I really think that because of fandom. so as people start watching, as people are watching like anime on the internet and downloading scanslations, one of the things they get when you've reached the end of Hikaru no Go or Naruto or whatever that you've been reading the scanslation of in say 2002, 2001, you're like, what else can I download? Oh, there are all these doujinshi, and people have kind of started translating them. So when I first started like being a fan of Hikaru no Go, I looked at some of the doujinshi, and I ran into people in communities who were like, the first time I heard of Hikaru no Go was because I was reading doujinshi, and they had the pairing of Akira and Hikaru. And so they'd only read doujinshi of the series first, and then they read the series. And this was more than one, this was several people, because the Shonen Jump Fujoshi in Japan are so prolific, they're slashing everything in Shonen Jump all the time. And so that doujinshi is the most popular doujinshi because it's from the most popular magazine. So in this weird kind of reverse way, it starts filtering to our shores. And then other people are like, you know what my cosplay is going to be?
Sorry.
Akira and Hikaru.
One question I do have. I'm actually right now I'm finally getting around to reading Hikaru no Go, and I'm stuck between the 11th and 12th volume. Do you have any websites that you can recommend to tide me over until that comes out?
Damn.
But no, also, I mean, they do, at least with... I mean, I can't believe I'm defending this, but the current Shonen Jump titles like Bleach and Naruto, which I do admit I read regularly because I'm a sucker for that kind of shit, they release on a weekly schedule such that the scanners are on them almost immediately. So if you want an English translation of what the latest chapter is, it's there like the day after it came out in Japan. So, I mean, there's not as much wait anymore, but it's still... And I mean, the series themselves, I don't think the writers are saying... This is going to be more female audience oriented. It's still definitely geared towards a male audience, but
it might be an editor saying, "Can you make that guy a little prettier?"
And in fact, you find that the stereotypical yaoi relationships are replicated throughout the shonen canon now. In Bleach, it's what's his name with well Ichigo, the protagonist. What's his name and what's his face? No, it's Ichigo who fits one stereotype, and then the one with the bow. What's his name?
I don't know.
Ishida.
That's right. He's the one who likes sewing? The Quincy. Yeah.
That's great. So it's like...
Quincy's are eternal enemies. It's important that the two guys be enemies, kind of.
Oh, yeah. That's very popular. You have to have... It has to be interesting. Although, I gotta say... But yeah, like, all of a sudden, shipping becomes, like, the kind of standard of fandom, which definitely was not the
no,
case.
It was simply not an element.
Yeah.
Or it was an element, but it was a fringe element.
It wasn't, yeah, you wouldn't expect someone to, like, you know, it wasn't like something, like, people shipping people now and seems like
people,
what fandom does.
People
which is
wrote fan fiction. You have, I don't remember her name now, but Star Trek II, you have Kirk's ex-wife. And there was a lot of fan fiction devoted, and this is now like the mid to late 80s, there was a lot of fan fiction devoted to fleshing out that relationship. What was that about? This is backstory.
Yeah.
This is not Kirk Spock slash, which of course existed starting in the 70s, but the far more fan fiction was dedicated to creating additional canon material, essentially, to fleshing out things that were not otherwise there.
Yes.
Now, nobody cares about canon.
I know.
And in fact, all they're interested in canon is finding where the subtext can be perverted into yaoi pairings. And I mean, it's very funny that we're talking about this and we have three of the hottest burning fujoshi on the East Coast. I'm tempted to drag them into this, but I don't know if I could handle
interview
the,
them later. But later? Definitely okay. Involve them, I think. Because let's be honest, I mean, they're having fun, and I hate to begrudge them of their shipping, and because I am entertained by it, but it is very different from what it was like when I first got into anime and fandom and all that stuff.
I mean, I just sorry had to interrupt, but you were mentioning subtext. And in some cases, I just can't help it. That's fan-created. That's not actually existent in the medium itself. Because, I mean, if you look at, like, you know, Oda-sensei and Kubo-sensei, who write One Piece and Bleach, respectively. Oh, sorry.
Don't wave.
It's a wand. You're a wizard, Harry. Sorry. No. We're past that. Sorry. No. No, but the writers of both One Piece and Bleach are... You know, one could consider perverts in the sense that, like, holy crap, they like to really, you know, emphasize certain parts of women's physique and whatnot, draw the sexual jokes. None of which could be possibly construed as going the other way. So, I mean, I have to believe to a certain extent that most of the subtexts are ones that are fan-created, not necessarily spurned on by the comic itself.
Your mention of Harry Potter makes me think of, A, Dumbledore being gay, you know, post after like
right.
the series gets released. And how long has like Harry Potter fan fiction been around? Just to give you an idea of like the sexualization of it. Just to give you
actually that's really good.
Good example, because that's
I don't know.
The same kind of time scale. Like how many people Harry Potter is such a mainstream book that a lot of people might have been writing kind of Harry Draco fanfic.
How long has like, that been around, you know?
Since I was in college.
I don't think it was since the first book, but certainly by the third, I think there was a community that was writing on it, but I'm not
definitely.
Certain.
But I mean, that was a while ago, just to give you an idea of like, just to give you a time scale of like Harry Potter fan, like fandom's
late
been around
90s.
For a very long time.
Yeah. But I want to make a specific point about subtext. What I'm suggesting is that there is tension between rivals. And what we know, what Freud tells us is that all tension is sexual tension. All tension can be reduced to sexual ramifications. And in fact, that is what is being brought to the forefront, which is why rivals get so frequently paired. So it's not that it's canon. It's not that in any way it's canon. But they are taking, they being, you know, the legions of fangirls, they are taking something which is... represented in the text and then exploring it in a way that I think academics would find
distasteful.
No, quite the contrary. Academics love this stuff.
Yes, I know, I mean, I do.
The postmodern, the POMO academics love this stuff, you know.
Still point out that Freud is still a sack of shit, but he completely balls.
Whatever. He's still worthy part of consideration.
Yes, he establishes psychoanalysis, which is...
Don't... Let's not go into that. Well, you can do that, but he's
on my side, so help me God.
You can do that, but that doesn't matter. It's the ideas are what matters.
My point is that and it does come from Freud, and Freud has sort of informed society and culture in this fashion, where everything is sublimated sexual tension. So any tension carries that spark. And for whatever reason, that's what people have seized upon. The question at the forefront of my brain is, why has this happened? What was it? What did it? What was the watershed event?
Now I wonder if it wasn't Harry Potter fans who came of age and got more and more sexualized.
But there was always a show that was ongoing while then suddenly people came of age and obviously started writing things. I wouldn't say that it's Harry Potter necessarily.
But I think Harry Potter's mainstream, and its fan fiction is so mainstream that it may have had an overall effect on fandom on the whole.
I don't know. I mean, I can't say much about Star Trek fan fiction, but I assume that it existed all.
It did, but the people writing Star Trek fan fiction were in their 40s.
Yes,
and they were almost entirely women.
Not young teens like we have today.
Yeah, in Star Trek you see the foundations of some of the key Star Trek, or not Star Trek, sorry, fan fiction, terms / concepts, like the Mary Sue is born out of Star Trek, the introducing of a character that solves all the problems. Funny. Type thing. I mean, that's born out of Star Trek.
That's where it all developed, effectively.
Yeah.
The foundation was there. And I'm not saying in the 70s, shoujo authors and stuff were writing boys love comics and kind of laying this groundwork, but it didn't come out into the mainstream until much later.
And I say it again, the bulk of Star Trek fan fiction, and of course, Star Trek was the show that was being written about by the fans, it was either sexualized in a way that was canon, or it was on the fringe, sexualized, Kirk Spock / But this is something that was, it's not even enough to say it was on the fringe, it was ghettoized. They got one table, people looked askance at them, and had no idea where they fit.
I'm sure a lot of people were like, oh yeah, those weirdos over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's a given, it's standard.
And now it is front and center in everyone's mind, and being a part of fandom is digesting.
I feel ghettoized because I don't ship anyone. No, I'm kidding. In fact,
I feel ghettoized because you're saying, you say, the Fujoshi have their fun. Yes. And I certainly don't begrudge them their fun.
Good.
But what begins to wear on my nerves is when the initial artifact, the series comes out, and it is the subtext, which is now just vaguely subtext.
Yes.
It has been catered in such a way that the Fujoshi can take it, digest it, and then sort of vomit forth this rainbow.
That's a beautiful saying.
Well, thank you.
And you can say with
term is technicolor yawn.
Technicolor yawn.
That's excellent. And
puking in the heather.
Definitely Avatar is one of the great series that caters to that group.
Where the creators, this is as they are creating, this is forefront in their minds.
It is, because it's the people who idolize them, and so inevitably they think of that when they're creating
something. And to go back to Doctor Who, I have no problem. They've introduced this character, Captain Jack, right? Captain Jack, he's kind of cool. Bisexual protagonist, I have no, interesting.
He's fun.
But where suddenly the chief dramatic question becomes what romantic entanglements. I'm talking about
and
Torchwood.
And Doctor Who. It's crosses over between the two.
And Doctor Who fan fiction, where this is what people have seized upon. And that, to me, is bizarre.
Because he can have sex with anyone in the series. He's indiscriminate, and he's slutty, or whatever. That's probably a poor choice of words. But he's like the ideal character. RTD is very aware of the fans, and he might try and go against what certain fans say, but he is definitely one who thinks of it often when he is creating his works.
Yeah.
And he's not creating in a vacuum, because he's got a lot of different voices that he has easy access to thanks to the internet.
And
so,
Torchwood exists so he can have a lot of, it's my understanding at least, whatever is too gay for Doctor Who ends up in Torchwood.
Actually, I would say that's very fair.
And
are we witnessing now the birth of a new medium wherein the fans and the creators are in such a dialogue that it's now the creators are creating the are you know making a universe in which the setting is you know they basically made the setting and then saying to the fans, okay, here are your basic characters, do what you will with them.
I mean, yeah.
So essentially,
like, okay, this one manga that's come out recently and is at the con, Haruka Beyond the Stream of Time, is based on a video game, which is a game for girls where it's essentially like Fushigi Yugi. If there were no interesting characters and the plot wasn't interesting at all.
Which so, is...
Wait, I believe that's called Inuyasha. That already exists.
No.
Oh! Snap!
No, because in Inuyasha, Zing. Inuyasha does not have, like, a harem of guys whom she's got, who are protecting her. Like, that's not the plot of Inuyasha.
Just two guys.
Almost halfway. Halfway.
It's just two guys.
I don't think it's...
That other girl, no. Otherwise it'd be a complete sausage.
So in Haruka... Nice. That would be awesome if that was the actual plot of Haruka Beyond the Stream of Time.
Shippo, you got to get out of this. It's fantastic.
Whoa.
That was dirty.
So in Haruka, when you read the manga... So I read the...
Foxy!
I read the volume. I read the first volume of the Haruka manga, and it's horrible. There's no content at all. It's only fodder for someone's doujin or fan fiction, because the main character has no personality because it's a video game avatar. The other characters are just kind of yaoi stereotypes for you to play whatever onto that you want, and it's horrible. But it is like manga created with that in mind, like saying, here, run with it.
A dating sim-esque kind of character development.
Well, because it is based on a dating sim. But to a lesser extent, like, readers are in a constant dialogue with, like, manga editors and stuff, where they send in a postcard in Chuan every week or whatever, if it's a weekly magazine, saying, I like this, I like that, this character was my favorite, really loved the last chapter, hated what happened, and whatever. And so they do, after it became, like, a commercial medium, they do drive a little bit where the story's going. And as soon as the ratings drop...
Which is what happens in American soap operas.
Yeah.
And I decry this as a very poor addition to genre realization, where soap operas resolve, I guess, or resolve, revolve around who gets with who, and that's what American housewives worry about.
Well, it's the mainstreamization. That's a terrible word, but, you know,
but
that might
be
part of it.
I think, indeed... What we're addressing earlier is perhaps becoming the case where the space between the fan idea and the creator idea is collapsed. And, like, this is terrible. How do you tell a story if you're wholly dependent on popular opinion?
Well, it's not easy, but it's doable.
Well, it's doable, but only...
See Doctor Who, see the Avatar.
Only if you... Well, I don't know. I think Avatar...
It has a story, but it also caters to... I mean, well, granted, it teases, really. It doesn't cater.
Yeah, which is... I mean, that I'm okay with as a compromise. Right?
Well, then there you go. That's one option.
If Doctor Who and Captain Jack, if they wink at each other periodically.
Yeah, well, RTD likes to flaunt. You know, he's like, I'm going to do this regardless of what the fans say. But, you know, what ends up happening usually appeases the fans in some way, I'd imagine. So,
but what you end up with,
compromise,
like,
at least.
Narrative is not by committee.
No.
And it ought not be by committee, because what you end up with is glop. You end up with...
Potentially.
Can you name a single committee-driven narrative that's worth a damn?
I thought the Ways and Means Committee was very effective.
Hush.
Harumph, harumph, resign, resign,
rubble,
resign.
Rubble, rubble, rubble.
Are you kids these gays? Get off my lawn.
Sit down, sit down, sit down, resign, resign.